Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First up on our show, I'll be chatting with Sean Wiltshire and Shelley Andrews, who'll be telling us a little bit about mentorability. So what can you tell me about mentorability?
Mentorability is a national initiative that Annette Borals, I believe, our Canadian Association for Employment president, I guess, spearheaded in British Columbia and thought it would be a very applicable initiative to go nationwide. And recently it was awarded through the federal government, a three-year project, coast to coast, to find mentorability matches, throughout our community for individuals with disabilities.
And it's a new idea too, Cam, because for Canada, we're trying to again increase the participation, and with our government just putting in new accessibility legislation. We're really trying to give people the opportunity to do some understanding of what other careers are out there and what are their skills and how do the skills that they have match with maybe the job they want. So it's really a first step process to say to people, you know, young kids and people just coming out of high school, let's try on a few jobs. Let's find a mentor for an area you're really interested in. And maybe you can find out if all the information you need. And of course, we know every job is always better explained by somebody who actually does the job. So it's a very personal interaction that the individual gets, and the experience gives them the opportunity to be able to better make career choices.
So
call it like a taste tester, actually.
Yeah.
So I know based on our previous interviews that the work you're looking to give these people has to be meaningful. It's not just busy work for the sake of saying, oh, look how great we are. We're giving someone with a disability a chance.
Yeah, this is not a charity model. This is, you know, the mentorability is hopefully a step into having paid employment. So, you know, a lot of individuals don't have any idea what they might want to do or what they're able to do. So, this gives them an opportunity to try it on and see if this is what they really have envisioned, you know. So it's a great opportunity for employers to become more aware of the abilities of individuals that they may not always take into account in their, when they're looking to place individuals within their workforce.
And this is a real opportunity for organizations to access new folks in the community who maybe haven't heard about the opportunity to gain employment. And they may have been nervous about starting a job without having a lot of information, and people are telling them they have to go to work. So we're going back to the basics again, Cam, of asking people, what do you want? What do you think your skills are? Let's talk about the talents you have, and let's try one of them out and see, is that the direction you want to go? And so very often after the mentorability program, or people have an opportunity to get a mentor, they might make the same career decision. They might decide, I need more education. Or they might decide to go in a totally different direction. And that's based on their experience. So So the exciting piece of this is it always goes back to the individual having choice, having opportunity, and of course, more information.
So how do you go about tearing down any myths or stereotypes that might exist concerning hiring a person with a disability and getting them actually started on this road?
Well, I guess a lot of that comes from the service providers and the history of individuals working. You know, statistics show that, you know, hiring an individual with a disability actually increases the, you know, productivity within their workforce. The culture, you know, having an individual, a family member with a disability that is working at your local Walmart also encourages other members to shop at that store or a mom and pop shop. So some of the myths, like, you know, that there are more injuries because you are an individual with a disability, actually that is not the case. There is nothing to show that compensations are increased because of an injury on a work site because a person has a disability. Actually, there's statistics that indicate that productivity is much higher with having individuals with a disability employed within their workforce. So these are some of the myths that we as service providers have a responsibility to show to our employers and the employers in the community that the fears that you have are not always warranted.
And giving people information is always the opportunity to provide education and to provide insight. And we often use what we just call a sector champion. So maybe it's an employer or a mentor that we've used in the past that have employed a number of people. And we will, you know, ask them to speak to other people and talk about the benefits and, you know, how diversifying their workforce helped make their workforce more innovative, looking at problem solving. And as we all know, folks with disabilities solve problems differently because they have different challenges in daily life. What we're looking for every employer is the opportunity to give people that idea that innovation really comes from trying to solve a problem with a new view. And folks with disabilities and other people, whether that be a new Canadian or a senior, they all have a different view. And by supporting that diversity and inclusion, we're getting employers to understand that, hey, this is what my business needs, and how do I get more of it?
It's thinking outside the box.
So,
and that's what we're trying to get employers to look at. Think outside the box. Don't just look at what's in front of you. Try to look at what it can look like and what you would like to see it, being more diverse, more inclusive.
So if you could see any one outcome of this long-term basis for the project, what would you want to see?
I think what we'd want to see is the opportunity for as many people as possible to have an opportunity to look at what careers they are interested in, what their aptitudes and their feelings and their desires are about where to work.
I agree with Sean. It's the opportunity. Giving someone that you normally would not even consider part of your workforce, in a lot of cases, that opportunity to explore and to, like, you know, ignite some kind of new passion, a new opportunity. And I think for a lot of individuals, that is not always taken into account. They're dismissed in a lot of cases, but they can bring a lot to a workforce.
I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Okay.
In this next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Lucy Corpano Croto from the CAPES Cafe. So I understand the cafe has a connection to those with intellectual disabilities. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yeah, so just like you said, it's a cafe that's, we have all sorts of people. It's mainly run by adults with Down syndrome right now, but we do have a couple that are developmentally delayed and one that has a bit of a processing disorder.
So what was the inspiration behind opening a cafe run by such individuals?
Well, I work with children with special needs, and I really love my job. Last year, I did a cafe with my child at his school, St. Christopher, and we did, the program started around, I want to say, January, February. And what we did was Mondays, he would take orders. On Thursdays, he would go around, he would bake the cookies, and then on Fridays, he would deliver. And at that age, it's a bit different. You're working on social skills. And with him, I saw a big change. And so that really fueled my fire. And then in April, I visited a cafe in Chicago that was run by adults with Down syndrome. And it was very efficient, and it was a great place to be. And I've been following cafes around the world. I'm on social media for a while now that are run by people with different disabilities. So kind of just a mixture of everything, and just really wanting to do something where we celebrate them.
So how does the community typically respond to such cafes? Is there generally a positive reaction to having people with disabilities working?
I think the people that have come in have been supportive, and all of them are interacting. So I was just saying, you can never really tell with the internet. Like, a lot of people can support it, and then there can be some that have questions with a negative implication or something like that. But I think for the most part, people like the idea. I don't think anyone's truly opposed to the core of it.
So how do you go about encouraging those with disabilities to be a part of this work?
Well, in the work, or people that are not with me?
A little of both. You said...
So, I think when anyone starts a new job, right, like there's things that you have to get used to and get a hang of. But I like to say this is just my first week of this job too. So we're all in a learning process, and we're going to make mistakes, but you just got to praise them for what they're doing good and teach them when they make a mistake, just like anyone else. And for anyone that's not in the cafe particularly, I'd love to meet them, and I'd love to encourage them to find employment, to just build themselves up. There are a few people who have come in looking for work, and they've been amazing. They introduce themselves like anyone else. They talk about their resume. They say, you know, those professional lines like looking forward to hearing from you. They just take a bit to... Like, it's not even modification, it's just you wanting to interact with them.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for places like this and an inclusive atmosphere, what would you say?
I just say to take a little bit of your time to be personal with these people and allow them to feel like you want them there, and allow them to feel like they're doing a good job, and teach them. Don't just assume that they're not, that they don't belong, or that they're not supposed to be there. Encourage them, teach them, be with them, enjoy them, celebrate them, praise them. They're great.
So, what are the next steps in your work?
I think right now we're just getting settled. Been, like I said before, it's my first week of this job too, so it's been a learning process and just getting settled, but I do want this to be kind of like a training studio where they come here, they get those references and those resources, and they learn skills and develop the ones that they already have, and just grow stronger in order to be able to go on to a different job. So I want this to be somewhere where maybe we collaborate with Community Living or Chasing Hazel Foundation or Autism Ontario, where they get those resume building skills, they get the interaction with other social programs, just to build on them and be able to move them forward and continue that cycle.
like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Canadian Blood Services invites you to save a life today. Every 60 seconds, someone in Canada needs blood. Donating is simple, and your blood will go to help Canadians undergoing heart surgery, leukemia treatment, or those involved in an accident. Go online and book your appointment today at www.blood.ca or give us a call toll-free at 1-888-2-DONATE. That's 1-888-236-6283.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Sean Wiltshire and Shelley Andrews about the latest happenings with Mentorability, and from Lucy Corpano Croto about the Capaz Cafe. In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Marcia Gregg, who will be telling us a little bit about autism treatment. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with the autism work.
We talked to you on your show about the Summit Center for Preschool Children with Autism before, and we're very happy to be able to talk about it again. We have two main programs at the Summit Center. Our STEP program, where children with autism from as young as we can find them up till 6 years old come here 4 days a week with are taught by our trained behavior therapist using applied behavior analysis, and 1 day a week at home by our behavior therapist. And our second program, started in 2007, is Unity Parent Training, where parents come here for 12 weeks every morning, 3 hours a morning, with their child, and we train the parents in how to teach their children using ABA at home. And we're very proud of that. We're just right now in the middle of our 39th session teaching parents, and we are so constantly amazed with how much parents sacrifice to help their children and how well parents do with learning to teach their children at home.
So what are some of the primary skills that are taught to these parents?
I'm having a real tough time hearing you again. Speak up or a little closer to the phone?
Yeah. So what are some of the primary skills these parents learn through the program?
I think one of the biggest ones is positive reinforcement. We tell parents, catch your child doing something right and reinforce that. Sometimes it's a little bit tricky to find a reinforcer that is the child consistently likes. So we teach parents to get a whole bag of tricks, to find things that really motivate their child to learn communication skills, social skills, daily living skills, things they need to participate in family life, to play with other kids, and get ready for school.
So what are some of the key challenges a parent has to deal with?
One of the first challenges I know is just getting a diagnosis, getting an assessment for their child. That can take some time. We try in Windsor to make it as fast as we can. Of course, once the child has a diagnosis of autism, that may take some parents some time to adjust to. It's not usually anything a parent expects for their child. And then I think the parents face the challenge of trying to access the service system for children with autism in Ontario, which has been changed a couple times in the past year. It's supposed to be changing again next April. Long waiting lists for any kind of effective evidence-based treatment. Meeting other parents. That's often very helpful for parents to talk to other parents who are in the same situation. Parents do have a lot of hurdles to face to get the very best help for their child.
So What's been the greatest success that you can recall in your time working in this field?
Well, I think, parents are much more aware of autism now, much more aware of the early signs, even more determined to try and get a screening or an assessment for their child to learn evidence-based methods to help their child. A couple successes we've had recently, in January, we started a sibling screening clinic, and many parents are taking advantage of that, where we know that about up to 20% of the brothers and sisters of children with autism will also have autism. So screening those siblings right away to let parents know we may be looking at autism here, or to give parents reassurance that, this other sibling is showing no signs of autism yet.
So,
we also started 3 years ago a screening clinic at the John McGivney Children's Center to screen children who have very complex medical, neurological, physical disabilities, because we know that those kids have a higher rate of autism, yet they're diagnosed less often. So we believe that they deserve to get the best treatment for autism as well. And that usually starts off with getting a diagnosis. So those have been some successes for us recently.
So are there any myths or stereotypes about autism out there that you have to deal with?
I think there's a lot of myths about autism. Certainly on social media, there's a lot going around. Like, for example, we know that autism is not caused by vaccines. We know, in terms of treatment, we know that applied behavior analysis has the most research support to provide lasting improvement and progress in children with autism. And we know that the way that ABA is practiced today is in a very warm, a respectful, and playful way with young children with autism. And it's certainly something that most children enjoy.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for the ongoing work and a true understanding of this condition, what would you say?
I would say there are long waiting lists for anything, for everything for autism, and I'm so sorry about that. But that the more that everyone can be aware of the early signs of autism, get your child on every wait list that you can. Make sure that your child gets a screening or a diagnosis at the youngest age possible. Tell your neighbors where you can get a screening or a diagnosis for autism. And also educate yourself on what are the evidence-based methods for teaching children with autism. And we know that the younger that children start getting the most effective treatment, the more progress they can make.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
My friends, I'm glad to see these interviews had the chance to say something I've always maintained, that disability rights, as far as employment, are essential. Fact is, it's a vital part of the workforce. These people bring unique perspectives and skills you won't find anywhere else. And by creating real opportunity, real meaning in their work, you're giving them that sense of strength we're all searching for. The idea that, yes, they matter, and yes, their work matters. Tokenism is fine in principle, except when a person says, does this really count? Am I doing something that really advances the work? And a lot of times, you'd be surprised how introspective someone can be about that. A person with a disability doesn't just want to work and collect a paycheck. They want to feel that they're contributing something, maybe through their work in some way making the world a better place. That's what we're all looking for, really. No matter what type of condition it may be, no matter where we're coming from, we We all share that struggle and that search, that idea that somebody tells us we can only progress so far, that we're going to be stuck with that our whole lives. Not because it's true, but because somebody decided to put that glass ceiling on us. Now, who in the world gave them the right to dictate the fact that you have this skill, you have this potential, but yeah, we're only going to let you explore it up to a point? Sean's work in particular has had ripple effects overseas in terms of getting people with disabilities actual work. And in some cases, that's for the very first time. Yeah, on the surface, it's fine. They get a job, that's great, it's good for them. But it's more than that. It sets a precedent. It says to any place that's still developing these practices and these policies that, yeah, somebody made it work, so there's no excuse for us. There is no way we can say that it's impossible, that it can't be done. And all too often, I hear that employers get afraid because they think an accommodation will put them out of business or that there'll be legal action at the drop of a hat. Truth is, that's not the case. Most accommodations are very simple things, but they are things that allow a person with a disability just to succeed on an equal playing field. As for the legal side of things, no. A lot of these people are grateful to have their jobs, and they're not going to demand too much. But that doesn't mean we should give them too little. It means everyone who walks in to the service industry or a retailer or whatever the business is should be considered an equal, productive piece of the puzzle, someone who's making things work. Truth is, we start fostering this at a young age. If we look at that child with a disability and say, "You're going to grow up to change the world," maybe they'll even believe it. Maybe they will grow up and change the world. But they have to recognize that for themselves first and foremost. We are all products of the environments that condition us, you know. If someone tells you over and over again for decades on end, "You'll never amount to anything, you'll never do anything," what message do you think people will take away from that? But conversely, if they hear that they will achieve, and they can create, what message do you think they'll take from that? Especially in economic hard times, and especially when everybody's out there looking for money, looking for a means to be sustainable, particularly in the developing world, you hear cases of children with disabilities being used just as beggars for their family. Fact is, that is not what any life is meant to do. They're not just meant to be someone who's a source of income for their family. That negates the fact that they would have hopes and dreams, things they want to achieve for themselves. Yes, having obligations and a sense of loyalty, that's important. It's a wonderful, beautiful thing. But to be ruled by the idea that all you exist for is to be a beggar, to provide money for your family, it's not enough. The truth is, everyone has some dream and some hope, some potential that does deserve consideration. And I am unbelievably grateful to hear that new opportunities are being created, not just here at home, but we're creating a sustainable model, something the world can look at and say, "We can do this. We can create a better future in which the word equality actually stands for something." This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.